Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have an excellent guest. I want to tell you a little bit about him. A lot of you already know because you've already bought the book, Code Red, Computerized Elections and the War on American Democracy. Now, in normal times, if life was normal, Jonathan is a chiropractor. But today, he's an election forensic analyst, and he's also the executive director of Election Defense Alliance. So I want to welcome Jonathan to the show. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Maria.
Well,
like I said, you were wondering.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm a big fan of chiropractic. I have been since I was in my 20s.
I'm an odd duck. Let's face it. And I'm also an attorney, and I became a chiropractor because I was absolutely fascinated with how the human body works. You know, not necessarily the medical model, symptom based, but how it works, weight bearing, balance, breathing, and the mind body, aspects were just absolutely fascinating to me. So I pursued that for a long time. I still do. But I have to say that I got called back more into the public sphere and more into the political sphere by what started happening to our electoral system when the computers took over the vote counting. So for the past 15 years, I've kind of split my time and, been doing public and then sort of health-related things as well, and political.
Right. Well, before the world went insane, I was having a happy little show. I was on regular radio, just talking about this, that, the other thing, and, making my living as an artist. I did watercolors. I made a good living, doing my private consultations with people. And there I was in the middle of a fun little show where I was even DJing some old tunes from the 60s, telling stories about what it used to be like. And all of a sudden, the voice in my head said, yeah, that's over. Time to cover politics. And I was like, no, anything but that. But knowing George W. Bush was running for office as an environmentalist, there was no way I could not switch gears on my show. Because I knew he'd be the beginning of the end for the environment, and I think Trump's going to be the grand finale on it. So the show shifted, and that was in July of 2000, Jonathan. Now, I have to tell you, I honestly believed that the stolen election of 2000 would be the biggest story I would ever cover on my show.
Well, you just weren't enough of a pessimist, Maria. I mean,
I was like, what could top this?
It was huge. I mean, I was at that inaugural, at the first inauguration, Bush's first inauguration, as a protester. We outnumbered the celebrants. We had about 60,000 people there, and they had about, a little under 2,000. And what most wigged me out was the media coverage, and this includes, the supposedly liberal press, basically made us disappear. They disappeared us, and there were, the coverage was as if there were a few hundred protesters. It was a mass protest, and they weren't, obviously some were politically opposed to Bush, but the real problem was the way he got into office and all the schemes that were being used to, very early signs of subverting the democracy, and then the media not covering that subversion. I realized right then we were in very deep trouble. So I have to say I was probably more pessimistic than you. I thought, wow, this is how it begins to unravel, and we ain't seen nothing yet, and that has pretty much turned out to be the case.
Pretty sad. But literally, at that time, there was no alternative media. I mean, think about it. In 2000, most people's computers didn't even have speakers.
Yep.
So, I was one of the first. As far as I know, I've got the longest real alternative news show on the internet. And then all the phonies started coming out. you know, the paid off, you know, whether they were paid off in gold, whether they were paid off in favors, to even dissuade anyone from believing that there could be such a thing as alternative media. But looking at that election, you know, what was crazy is at that time, Greg Palast was an unknown in this country. Yep. You know, he was writing for the BBC in London. And when he sent me his book, I immediately got him on my show. And yep. He's been on my show, you know, all these years later. But he does credit me with making his career in the United States. And, you know, he's still at it because he's still tracking around and pressing charges on Chris Kobach.
Very much. He's actually in Kansas now. I mean, he's going after Kobach.
And he
the king of vote suppression there, the Secretary of State of Kansas. And, you know, Greg sees a, you know, tremendous danger to our elections in the form, primarily, he focuses on voter suppression. And right. It's a huge thumb on the scale. I mean, my approach is that, you know, if you're going to govern as badly as this corporate elite has governed, and these you know, what used to be Republicans have governed, and you're going to hold on to power, you're going to have to put a lot of thumbs on the scale. And, you know, voter suppression is a big one, and so is the manipulation of votes in the pitch dark of cyberspace. And, you know, and so is, for that matter, you know, undermining the concept of truth itself. I mean, that's a big part of the strategy.
Oh, yeah.
These are all things that you know, confuse, mislead, discourage
right.
people. People get, you know, they go into a sort of, well, I can't have any impact despair. You know, a lot of that started, you know, you talked about getting into it in 2000, and, you know, and that was early in the game. A lot of this was this country basically, you know, was had a shot of Novocaine during the Clinton presidency, at least progressives in this country. And you know, following the Reagan years, basically from 1980 on, there was just this tremendous complacency and a big turn away from the public sphere. People just went about, you know, making money and
right.
gaining whatever they, you know, goodies they wanted to gain. And there was this sense that, you know, the government was maybe the enemy of the people. It certainly wasn't something you had to get your hands dirty dealing with. And so there was a tremendous passivity, and it was that passivity that really has led us step by step to where we are now. And, you know, there's a lot of waking up going on now.
Oh, yeah.
But it's late in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Late in the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, listen, I look at this ridiculous administration we have now and the ridiculous election, if you want to call it an election, in 2016. And one good thing I have to say is it really has uncovered all the wickedness inside our administration, inside the GOP, the Democrats, slackers. People got involved because they heard words they never heard before, like super delegates. To some people, they never heard of the Electoral College before. And you look at these Kavanaugh hearings, you look at how women are sweeping in a lot of these nominations, you know, going towards the midterms. People have gotten more politically involved, or at least aware, than they would have had the election gone smoothly.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, the Russians, whether they are at the gates or not, provides a pretty important news peg for being able to look at our elections and the electoral process and the vote counting process as well with a critical eye, under, you know, with a certain amount of suspicion. You know, when I tear my hair out, and some of my colleagues along with me, and there's not much left, I can tell you, is that, you know, this has been something we have been warning and warning and warning and analyzing for 16 years, basically since 2002, and long before this was even a gleam in Vladimir Putin's eye. I mean, this has been a system that has been incredibly vulnerable. I'm talking about the vote counting system at this point. I mean, there's plenty of other things wrong. There's big money, there's gerrymandering, there's voter suppression. But I'm talking about the very core of the system, the vote counting system, has been just insanely vulnerable to manipulation, and not just manipulation by outside hackers or foreign states, but manipulation by those who have the keys to the house, by those who are involved in the programming and distribution of the equipment, of the memory cards, the programmers who write the code and put it in there. You don't have to hack if you can, you know, if you have a pipeline to the original programmers. And that is one part of the truth which so far, I have to say, you know, even the alternative media steers clear of, and certainly the mainstream media will not touch with a 10-foot pole. And until we're willing to, you know, go there and say, along with, remember Walt Kelly's pogo, you know, we have met the enemy and he is us,
right.
You know, that's where the problem lies. We have an inherently corruptible and corrupted system, and apparently we're still not brave enough to look that in the eye.
I know. Here it is, you know, 2018, and what's changed since 2000? You know, I keep looking, and I'm like, God, have I done all this work for no reason? And I will tell you, reading your book, I felt sorry for you that you had to write it, okay? Because if I had to go through all those facts and figures, I don't think I could ever do it. But what I loved was everybody in this book has been on my show, from Cliff Curtis to Mark Crispin Miller. You know, I've covered how they steal elections from every which way possible. So when I got your book, I was like, oh, there's not going to be anything new in it. And as usual, I was surprised that there was plenty in here that I haven't seen in other people's work.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you also for the sympathy, because I do wallow in self-pity a fair amount of the time. This is a very, very frustrating enterprise because, you know, you take it on initially out of just, I mean, I have a statistics background. I could see what was happening in the 2004 election. I was actually prepared for the 2004 election at a time when, you know, basically nobody had any thoughts about exit poll, burglar alarm system, anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, this goes way back to then. Began to see it, you know, right in front of my nose. And, you know, things that would be actionable in almost any other field, you know, if it was astronomy or epidemiology or agronomy or anything. These are very powerful statistical fingerprints and statistical patterns. And just, you know, to see them consistently be either ignored completely, no response, or scoffed at, written off as conspiracy theory. And you try, you know, you try to get out there, you try, mm-hmm. try to get the message out. It's been very difficult. And frankly, the political system, in which I'll include most of the media, but just the political system alone,
right.
has very little incentive to respond and reform this process and institute a verified, public, observable vote counting process, which basically either means hand counting the ballots or having paper ballots for all elections and a serious audit protocol. That's what we need. The political system itself, I mean, all the people in Congress, all the people in these state legislatures, all the secretaries of state, governors, whatnot, they were all elected by this system. It worked for them in one way or another for whatever reason.
Right.
So the sense of urgency is non-existent, and they've shown it because they will not act.
Well, you still see it.
If anything, it's gone the opposite direction. It's actually gotten worse.
Absolutely. Well, you still see it. The GOP doesn't care if Russia interfered with the election because they won. But when you tell them the next time it could be a Democrat, they don't care. No money's been spent on election integrity. You know, none on cybersecurity. So, you know, listen, the system was set up this way because when people always ask me, I mean, if you look at Congress, Jonathan, I mean, your book is the answer, okay, to a lot of questions people have. If you look at Congress, what do they have, a 6% approval rating? But
it was around there. I mean, the famous one is in 2014 when they had been, you know, completely obstructionist. The Republicans held the majority in both houses, and they were basically blocking anything Obama could do, including judicial nominees, ironically enough, and you know, and any legislation. And they had, you know, for their good work, they had managed to earn an approval rating of 8% from Rasmussen, and Rasmussen is a Republican pollster whose polls skew to the right. So, you know, 8% coming out of Rasmussen, and they go into the November election with that 8% approval rating. And granted, congressional approval rating is always low, but this, for the first time in history, a plurality of voters, of likely voters, said that their own representative was not the best person for the job, that they prefer somebody else. We had never seen that before, going all the way back into the 1960s. So it was a complete throw-the-bums-out election. Well, the Republicans put up 222 of their representatives in the House for re-election, and of those 222, 220 won.
Right.
Quote, unquote, won.
Right. So people...
So they returned 99.1% of their incumbents who stood for re-election on an 8% approval rating. This is one reason why the Republicans right now are basically behaving like Thelma and Louise and you know, joining hands with Donald Trump and driving over the cliff, because they have intuited, I mean, whether they know directly about election rigging and all the various thumbs on the scale, which in many cases I'm sure they do, but even the ones who don't, behavioral psychology tells you that, you know, you have enough experiences of a certain type. We behave badly, we're intransigent, we are grossly unpopular, and guess what? We win anyway.
Right.
After a while, there's no limit. There's no force acting upon Mitch McConnell or any of these representatives, and it's true in many states as well, to moderate their impulses. So they are joining hands with Donald Trump and saying, "Whee, here we go,"
right,
and we'll see what happens in November. But I'll tell you, if I did not have all this evidence of, you know, rigged elections, I would be looking at November and saying, well, I'm counting the days. We got 92
right.
more days to go or whatever it is. We'll finally see a reckoning. The public's, you know, biennial right of review will kick in. And my God, will there ever be a house cleaning? Gerrymandering notwithstanding, the Democrats will win and there will be a reckoning for Donald Trump. And we will start, you know, to restore some degree of sanity for this country. However, given what I know about election theft, I do not hold that optimistic view. I look at it and say, it's going to be tough for them, but they are very likely, just as they did in 2014, just as they did in 2016, to find a way of shifting enough votes and disenfranchising enough voters in those close elections that they continue to hold power. And, you know, that's the end of democracy right there.
So well, I don't know. I wonder sometimes if we ever had democracy. But, you know, when people ask...
It wasn't perfect, but
right.
it had its problems.
Right,
this is another order of disease.
I know. At least it was somewhat normal. But, you know, your book is the answer to why these people keep holding their seats. Nobody's voting for them. Everybody hates them. You know, and the only thing, you know, at this point, I hate to agree with you, but I'm not getting my hopes up for the midterm unless they choose to throw it to the Democrats like they do once in a while, which you also mention in your book.
Yeah, a good hustler knows when to you know, sandbag a shot, and you can't win everything and expect people to continue playing with you. I will say I disagree with you only to the extent that, you know, when you say nobody, I mean, emotionally, I totally agree with you. Nobody likes them. Everybody hates them. But in fact, America has always, for a whole variety of reasons, been a fairly closely divided country, which makes it, you know, very ripe for the picking, because you really don't have to shift that many votes. It's not like, you have to make it all up out of whole cloth. You've got plenty of elections. I mean, if you look at the House, gerrymandering and the advantages of incumbency make it so that in an ordinary, you know, biennial House election, maybe 10 to 20% of the seats, at most 20% of the seats are competitive, are in play. The rest are all decided. They've carved up the districts. You got these incumbents.
Right.
Under any normal circumstances, there are not very many seats in play. And so those seats that are in play, those become the, you know, if you're Karl Rove,
right, the whole,
or Roger Stone or whoever, whatever operative is paid by the win.
Paul Manafort.
You know, you sit there with a map and you stick the push, you know, a literal map on the wall or a virtual map on the computer, and you stick the push pins into the districts that are competitive and you see what you need. And you figure out, you know, the vendors who provide this equipment and the contractors
right.
who program the equipment and distribute the equipment. They virtually all have powerful ties, strong ties to the right wing. So the access, you know, would the Democrats rig if they had the chance? Maybe, I don't know. But they don't have the access.
I don't know if they're smart enough.
Is by their, you know, is basically by Karl Rove and his affiliates. So, you know, you figure it out tactically and strategically, and it really doesn't take that much to change control, especially, you know, you got a Senate that's divided 51-49. You have a House that's just a few seats. A lot of these state legislatures. I mean, there are all these formerly blue or at least purple states that all of a sudden went red in 2010 and 2014 again when they were able to, you know, gerrymander after the 2010 election. America generally, the media and the public tends to focus just on the presidential races. You know, that gains all the attention. It's like, you know, it's like the Super Bowl. But this is really about the infrastructure of American politics. You steal elections all through that infrastructure. That's what gives you the solid base. That's what's enduring. Presidents have a way of coming and going. But that the state legislatures, the state secretaries of state and attorneys general, your House, your U.S. House, big advantages of incumbency, that's where you do it. And during the Obama presidency, the Democrats lost more seats in state legislatures by a factor. They lost twice as many seats during Obama's 8 years as any president in history had ever lost during their term. So, you know, why? Was it because Obama had a 12% approval rating? His approval rating was high relative to most presidents. He left office with a 59% approval rating. It never dropped below 40%. And, you know, yet Democrats just kept losing and losing and losing. And then you look at the 2014 election and you say, well, maybe it's just the progressive voters didn't turn out. That was what John Nichols had to say. You know, it was like the progressive voters didn't turn out. That's why the Republicans actually gained seats in 2014. And then you look at all these ballot propositions that passed, you know, $15 minimum wage, legalizing marijuana, pro-choice positions, pro-environment positions, one after another. And they passed by huge margins, I think an average of, you know, somewhere between 25 and 30% landslide margins, too large to rig. Who was voting for them if not progressive voters in all these states? So the progressive voters did turn out, but as John Nichols said, they just didn't elect Democratic candidates to the House and to the Senate. These were the close races for these candidates, and these were the ones where a relatively light thumb on the scale changed the results, and that is so easy to do in what I call the partisan proprietary pitch dark of cyberspace.
Absolutely.
They own it, they operate it, and it's just, it boggles the mind that we are continuing to trust this process.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I've been saying, you didn't know me at the time or all these years, but I've been saying all these years that what we need is paper ballots. And we need it counted live on TV, maybe by the Boys and Girl Scouts. Just put the kids out there counting the votes. You know, put it on a PBS station or whatnot. But, you know, as long as we're not using paper ballots, which, listen, I'm not saying they can't throw that either, but certainly not as easily as with computer ballots. We have no transparency. You know, you can go through all this campaigning, all this election night, all this bullcrap. And then, like, in 5 minutes, they already have a tally and tell you who won? How is that even possible?
Right. Well, it is possible because computers are computers and things happen very fast in computers. The problem is you can't trust it.
Right.
Because you
can't
don't know
see
what the program
it.
Is in there that is generating those numbers. So they come up with numbers, but do the numbers have any relation to the ballots cast? And I'll tell you something else about, you know, paper right now. Oh, about 75% of the jurisdictions use, or 75% of the ballots that are cast are actual paper ballots. The touch screens are down to, you know, somewhere in the 20s in terms of how many ballots they actually are cast on these DREs, these touchscreen computers. But, and this is a very big but, that paper only has meaning if it's accessible, if it can ever see the light of day. And if you actually look at how our elections are conducted and who has access to that paper, you find out it's never sees the light of day. It's never audited. It's never recounted in the vast majority of cases. And, you know, you'd have to dig very hard. And in the very, very, very few cases where there is some sort of recount, mm-hmm. that recount is delayed by weeks. There are all sorts of opportunities to go into the places where the one in 10,000 where there is a recount taking place and substitute ballots. And in case that sounds like a conspiracy theorist mirage, I was in Wisconsin when they recounted the Kloppenburg-Prosser Supreme Court race there for the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And in all the places where our forensic analysis had thrown up red flags, Milwaukee County, Racine County, Waukesha County, lo and behold, the ballot bags came in and they weren't numbered right. They were torn open. I mean, all sorts of signs of an attempt to just restuff the ballot bags to make them fit, you know, with ballots that added up to what the computers had tallied, ballot substitution. So paper alone won't do it. You need to have, at the very minimum, you have to have a toothy audit, an audit that is public, that is uniform, that has some teeth, and that is not telegraphed in advance. Coming up with an audit protocol is something of a challenge, but there are things called risk-limiting audits out there. I've actually come up with a hybrid protocol, which is easier to execute than the risk-limiting audits that are now being experimented with. So there are ways to do that. Better than all of that, better than waiting 2 days to do an audit and taking chances with, you know, what can happen with the ballots in between, would be what you said, having, it doesn't have to be Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but I mean, if you think about the Parkland students and how right. involved they are now in our politics and, mm-hmm. And in advancing their vision and their agenda and making sure that those, you know, that kind of incident isn't just encouraged by our legislators and by the, you know, obviously by the power of the NRA replacing those legislatures. They're tremendously engaged. Well, one way they could be engaged is to have high school and college students participate in this counting process. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, if we all participate in the counting process as citizens, we've done calculations on this, we're looking at 4 hours per voter per lifetime. So for 4 hours at one time in your life, you'd sit there and count ballots. Now, I've already served 12 days of jury duty, you know, given 12 days of service to the public cause in jury duty, not mm-hmm. thought much of it, not complained about it, right. hasn't changed my life or ruined my life. We're talking about 4 hours. We're talking about a tiny, tiny fraction of that. If we cannot make that our duty and fulfill that duty to our democracy, it's great talking about rights and all the rights that we should have, mm-hmm. but with rights come duties, and we have to take care of our democracy. And if we're not willing to do that, and not just do that, but demand to have the right to fulfill that duty. In other words, rise up as a public and say, this is our democracy.
Right.
And we claim this right to see those ballots, to count those ballots. That's what we need to do. And it's certainly doable. There are other countries that do it. Obviously, that, you know, the Netherlands just switched over. I mean, they took one whiff of our 2016 election. And they went straight to hand-counted paper ballots. Germany does it. Norway just switched over to do it. Canada does it. Now, granted, those are parliamentary democracies, and it's a shorter ballot. But, we have a longer ballot. It's a little more of an uphill slog. Is that going to stop us? We put a man on the moon. We can't count our ballots. This is ridiculous. And this is taking the public and putting us to sleep and seducing us
right.
with speed, convenience, and above all, entertainment.
Right.
What is an election in this country? It's a Super Bowl. You
it
get
is.
To go home, cast your vote or not cast your vote, go home, put your feet up on the couch, and, you know, listen to the pundits talk about it and look at those blue and red blinking states and enjoy the show. Well, if that's what we want, that's what we get, and that's what we deserve, and it's corrupted. And if we want it to be uncorrupted, we're going to have to be more participant.
Absolutely. Listen, you said earlier, you know, you don't know why you do this, you know, because you remember a pleasant life in a normal world, but you're a patriot, okay? You're a true patriot. You know, today you either are a patriot or a hatriot. You know, I question my sanity doing this show as long as I have, but I can't stop myself, you know,
yeah.
And I think if you're a true patriot and you see what's happening to this country, I mean, you sound like a fairly young guy, you know, I'm getting close to 70 here. So I remember, I remember a totally different America.
I do too. I mean, I grew up, you know, I'm a little younger than you are, but I'm in my 60s. And, you know, yeah, no, I remember that as well. And look, it was never beautiful. It was never quite America the Beautiful. Maybe it was America the Almost Beautiful. We had a lot of cynicism. We did a lot
right.
of bad things, even in the good old days. But this is a completely different order. This is what happens to a democracy when you just sort of leave it laying out.
Of course.
And don't take care of it, because there are always, and there have always been, for whatever reason, part of the human constitution is that there will be humans who are greedy, who are frightened, who want, you know, must control others, who have this drive towards power, whether it's sexual power or it's monetary power or it's
right.
military power. And they're out there, and they're not going to go away. And you function... You know, all our listeners here and all the people they know and all the people that would just wish to see some semblance of distributed justice, some semblance of peace initiative, some semblance of fairness and protection of the environment. We function as an immune system, you know, for this body. And it's we who have broken down. The germs are always there.
Right.
The Donald Trumps, the bastards of the world, are always there. They're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot like, you know, what happens in the human body. These people, you know, I don't believe you catch a cold. I believe you have those pathogens are floating around in your system all the time. But when your immune system, when you get stressed, and your immune system takes a nap or is blocked in some way, that's when they start multiplying, that's when they take over. And we're seeing exactly that happen with our body politic now. And so it really is on us. And, you know, that's the second half of this. I mean, we haven't talked any specific forensics. It's like, well, Jonathan, how do you know that this is happening? Or what kind of evidence do you have? We haven't talked about that, and we haven't talked about...
Well,
what exactly can we do?
Get to that in the second half, because we need to take a short break. So stay with us. Jonathan and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Jonathan Simon, A True Patriot. Great book, Buy 10. Hand them out to everyone before the midterms. Code Red, Computerized Elections and the War on American Democracy. This book is one of the most important books you're ever going to read or ever share with any of your friends, because if you want true change in America, you have to understand where the problems are. Now, Jonathan, before I get started, back talking to you, I do want to read a little piece out of your book, because, it was, you know, I always put big stars next to something that I find shocking. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's on page 43. How does America stand up against other long-established democracies when it comes to electoral integrity? Answer, not very well. Indeed, in a joint study conducted by Harvard and the University of Sydney, the U.S. elections of 2012 and 2014 scored dead last amongst the group of 54 long-established democracies. Dead last. I think that that's an amazing fact and figure for everybody to share that with your friends this weekend when you're hanging out. You know, I always like to give people a little talking point to just share that one with your friends. Share that figure. Out of 54 long-established democracies, our election integrity is dead last.
Yeah. And, you know, we are the beacon of democracy, after all, in our own minds. It's one of the few pieces of, you know, sort of positive self-esteem, illusory though it may be, that we've managed to maintain since the good old days of, you know, World War II and fading on through Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and 9/11. And we're a country that has, you know, some serious self-image problems at this point, but at least our elections are the best, you know, in the world.
All right.
That's a myth. And boy, I mean, if you go to my website is coderedtwo2014.com, and on there's a thing called 19 myths about our elections. And, you know, it just goes through what an illusion that is, that we are, you know, do things so well. In fact, it is a system designed for concealment. The vote counting component of the system has been designed for concealment. And it works very hard to keep itself concealed and keep anyone who would like to, you know, who is attempting to bring transparency to it, to thwart their efforts. I can give one really good single example, because sometimes people say, well, you know, this is all sort of abstract and, you know, theoretical and whatnot. But, you know, the 2016 election itself had all sorts of red flags. And, you know, we use various different baselines for our forensic analyses, and exit polls are one of them. And exit polls have been unfortunately, they've been discredited with a lot of misinformation about them,
Oh, yeah.
A lot of lack of understanding about them. We work hard when we use exit polls to make sure that we're not just saying, well, the exit poll said this and the vote count said that, and, you know, therefore the vote counts are fraudulent. No. We look at those exit polls. We look at the demographics in those exit polls. We look at the partisanship. We look at the sampling methodology, and we do everything in our power to either validate or invalidate them. And when they are valid as representatives of the voting public, then they stand as a very strong baseline. And what we saw in the 2016 primaries was that the exit polls on the Republican side were basically spot on. When you looked at them as a group, they told you exactly what you would think if they were well administered, mm-hmm. very small variance from the vote counts, basically got those Republican elections in state after state, 20 some odd states, accurately. On the Democratic side, they were wildly off, and with just one or two exceptions, 20 plus of them were all off in the same direction, and that is Bernie Sanders did better in the exit polls, Hillary Clinton did better in the vote counts. And this is the kind of pattern that we look at. I call it a second order comparative, where you're not just looking at exit polls versus vote count, you're looking, okay, this set of exit polls, and they're taken on the same days by the same interviewers working for the same company with the same methodology, and over here in this set of races, everything looks fine, and over here in this other categorically different set of races, because they were the Democratic nominee, way off, all in the same direction, as if it was in the interest of someone to make sure that Bernie Sanders was not the candidate in November. Then you get to November. And in November, what we had is we had a national exit poll. And although that has been ridiculed by some improperly, again, because they don't understand how these exit polls work, and that's all stuff that I do, go into in detail in the book. But the national exit poll, the national sample exit poll, was accurate. It was 1% off from the popular from the popular vote cast around the nation. So this was your baseline of baselines. When you went into the key battleground states, Wisconsin, Ohio, North Carolina, Florida, Pennsylvania, the ones that put Trump over the top by these tiny margins, 77,000 votes is what made Donald Trump the president of the United States. 77,000 votes spread over three states,
right,
with all sorts of red flags in all those three states, and recounts that were thwarted in all those three states. When you went into those states, the exit polls were way off, or the vote counts were way off. Something was way off. Enormous disparity. So the pollsters got it right when looking at the nation as a whole, which included all these non-competitive states where you wouldn't expect there to be any rigging, and where it counted in these battleground states that Trump needed to run the table, that he had a 1 in 600 chance of winning all those states.
Right. Well, I forget.
We found all these major disparities all in the same direction. So that led us to, you know, put out an alarm about that election, which of course was ignored, except, you know, Jill Stein tried, but her recounts were thwarted. Then we went into 2017, and there is one election in 2017 that basically says it all. It has all the components, and I just want to go very briefly into it.
Okay.
And that was the election in Georgia for the 6th Congressional District. This was John Ossoff, a 30-year-old Democrat, against Karen Handel, who was a Republican, who had been Secretary of State and was very much, you know, dyed in the wool in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an election that really made no difference in terms of control of the House. I mean, the House was going to stay in Republican control in any event, but it was an agreed-upon pitched battle site by both parties to, as a kind of referendum on the early presidency of Donald Trump. And so this was the most expensive House election in history. Over $50 million were put
wow.
into this seemingly unimportant district. Okay, what do we know about this election? Here's what we know. In advance of the election, there was a whistleblower who came forward and divulged this information. It was later verified by the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. There were massive security breaches on the servers of the entity that was charged with the counting of the votes. And that was, and also with the voter databases. This was an outfit called Kennesaw State University Elections Center. And it was commissioned by Brian Kemp, now candidate for governor of Georgia, Secretary of State at this point, and now and in 2017. Very, very dirty fellow, as I think, you know, if you do some research, you'll find out, sort of up there with Kris Kobach. These security breaches were detected, were reported on, and were not in any way, shape, or form addressed. We then go into the election itself, and there's a preliminary election with about 19 candidates. John Ossoff needs to win 50% in order to win outright the seat. And he's ahead. The whole night, he's up over 50%, 51.3%, whatever. All of a sudden, there's a glitch in Fulton County, and the vote counting stops for 2 hours. The vote counting resumes, and Ossoff is under 50%. He's at 48.7%, whatever. We've seen that before.
Right.
We've seen that in quite a few elections before, including in 2004 in Ohio, where Bush all of a sudden surged ahead when the Ohio vote counting equipment went down, and the votes were ported over to Mike Connell, who was the Karl Rove's IT guru. He had set up backup servers in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The votes went over there for quote unquote processing, and when they came back, all of a sudden Bush had won Ohio in the presidency. And we've seen it in other occasions too.
Right.
This is a very familiar fingerprint of fraud. So Ossoff comes in under 50%, goes off to a runoff election against Karen Handel, who had gotten 19% of the vote. Now, as we know, Karen Handel won that election, but it's how she won the election that took place in June of 2017 that is so striking. when the votes were cast as early or absentee voting, which is part of the Georgia protocol, those votes were cast on paper, and they were run through optical scanners. The votes that were cast on Election Day that were not absentee votes, and actually I should correct myself, the early and the Election Day votes were cast on DREs. When you went into a poll, and at the polling place, let's say it was a week before the election, said, I want to vote, they gave you a touchscreen, a DRE, no paper. On Election Day, there was no paper. But if you mailed in your vote, if you mailed in your vote, then it was on paper and it was counted by an opscan, and it would be theoretically traceable. And in this day and age, now, and given all the security protocol issues that had come up around this election, there was reason to believe that somebody might actually sue and try to get access to those ballots. So they were ballots that you wouldn't touch if you were a smart rigger.
Right.
But the DRE ballots, those were untraceable. In no way, shape, or form could they be traced. So they were unverifiable. So what happens? Ossoff wins the verifiable paper ballots 64 to 36. 2-1, basically. A huge landslide.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going into Election Day with a significant lead. On Election Day, the votes cast on DREs, Karen Handel all of a sudden wins by 16%. And, you know, for numerically challenged people, all I can say is this is absolutely shocking. It requires, from everything we know about probability statistics, pattern
right.
analysis, everything, it requires some sort of the earth stood still explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any. There was nothing. I mean, you know, the kind of thing that might have happened if Ossoff had been caught in bed with a farm animal, you know, 2 days before the election. Okay, you know, then it would explain it. Everybody
right.
ran away from it. Nothing of the sort. We would comb through everything there was in Georgia, everything there was between the two candidates. It was just this stark difference between how votes were, what the results were when votes were verifiable, and what the results were when the votes were not verifiable. And yes, we looked into it. We thought, well, you know, maybe just Democrats love to vote by mail. Just the other way around. In Georgia 6, going back three elections, Republicans have the preference. Republican voters are more apt to vote by mail. So there was no benign explanation whatsoever. It ended with a Karen Handel, narrow little Karen Handel victory, that was enabled by that 16% Election Day landslide out of nowhere. And by the way, the polls did not in any way, shape, or form project that. There were no polls in which Karen Handel was even leading, let alone by 16% going into Election Day. So there was a lawsuit. And the lawsuit, unfortunately, came too late to challenge the results under the contest law of the state. But what it does, what it was trying to challenge was it was trying to get the machines themselves, these DREs, these untraceable, unverifiable DREs, decertified. And as part of that lawsuit, there was demanded in evidence the servers from Kennesaw State on which that election was programmed so that it could be examined, like what went on here.
Right.
Well, 4 days after the filing of that lawsuit, the server that had been subpoenaed was destroyed. It was degaussed. They call it degaussed. You know, if you know Gauss, he was a big name in magnetism back in the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And so degaussing is a method of erasing computer drives, in such a way that nothing is left. You know, sometimes you do a delete, but then you can go back and
right.
you know, restore. Nothing can be restored. It's like coming in with a nuclear magnet and just wiping everything off permanently. It was degaussed, destroyed. And then it was discovered that there were two backup servers. The day the suit was removed to federal court, about a month later, those two backup servers were destroyed by Kennesaw State. Was an investigation launched by Trump's FBI, or, you know, the
right.
investigation launched by the
not.
Secretary of State,
right.
Brian Kemp, No, absolutely not. Buried, done, finished. And, you know, you could not find a more blatant destruction of evidence in a circumstance where there was all sorts of probable cause to look at that evidence to see what had actually happened. That election is really quintessential and represents how absolutely insecure our system is, and the length that the protectors of that system, those who want to, not to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg,
right?
To what length they will go to maintain it.
Well, you could see it. They don't want to put any money behind election integrity or anything else. They like the system just the way it is. Jonathan,
okay. They allocated $340 million of money. This is Congress that had already been allocated, or what had already been approved as part of the original HAVA bill back in 2002. So this year they got around to saying, okay, we'll release that money to the states to, address these security fears about Russian interference or whatever. $340 million? I mean, that's basically what it takes to plant trees in Chicago for, you know.
Right.
This is an absolute pocket change. This is coins in the couch cushions. We spent that much every single day in Iraq and Afghanistan. Every day we threw $340 million or
right.
more into promoting democracy in Iraq and in Afghanistan. You know, how's it working for us?
Right, yeah, working out pretty good.
We are so cheap with our own democracy, and you can't believe that this is merely an oversight or negligence. This has to be deliberate. And you know what? The people, the public, are the enemy from the standpoint of the politicians. And I would have to say, from the standpoint of the politicians, for the most part, of both parties, certainly of the Republicans, many of the Democrats, and as well of much of the mainstream media, we are the troublemakers. We are the pains in the ass that should not know too much.
Right.
And this is, you know, we're watching what happens to a democracy when it gets old and it gets sclerotic and it starts resting on its laurels and it forgets the duties that are involved in maintaining it.
Well, well said. Can't argue that. Jonathan, we only have like 2 minutes left. You said earlier your website is Code Red 2014. Your book says Code Red 2018.
Yeah, they both work. They both
okay.
point to the same
just
place.
Checking.
I just, you know, so
just
you
checking.
Can just put in Code Red 2018. It gets you to the same place.
Okay.
Lots of information there. I can't say I'm like one of these diuretic bloggers that just keeps churning it out. I mean, but there is plenty there for anybody who's interested. And where I would want to go with that is this ultimately is the public responsibility. And what does that mean? That means a public that is informed, that becomes active and becomes fierce and becomes tenacious about this very, very, very basic core issue. How would you do that? Well, you know, I have some recommendations in the book. One of them involves economic leverage. And, you know, probably that you could have ballot propositions passed in various states. But again, those are going to be voted on those very machines
right.
that we've come to distrust. So it might come down to public civil action. And that means, you know, we could say we're not buying anything in the state of Wisconsin that we don't need. We're not buying any flat screen TVs. We're not buying any new cars. We're not spending money as consumers until you get together as a legislature and a governor and draft this legislation providing for public observable vote counting in this state. This would be very powerful. I mean, it's something that was done in North Carolina when the bathroom bill passed, that execrable, you know, bathroom
right.
bill about the genders, and it actually worked. They actually, you know, very quickly, because corporations are incredibly sensitive to their bottom lines, and states are incredibly sensitive to their tax base. And when they start losing money, that's when they start paying attention.
Exactly.
The last I looked, you know, the election integrity forces in this country, we don't have the money that Monsanto or ExxonMobil or big, you know, Wall Street has to throw around. But what we do have is we're all workers, we're all taxpayers, and we're all consumers. And that is a tremendous sleeping giant, a tremendous source of power that is very, you know, from a corporate standpoint, very dangerous. But it has not even begun to be explored by the citizens of this country.
Well, I've said for years, you vote with your dollars. That's the one vote that really matters. Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thanks, Maria. Thank you for having me, and I'd be happy to talk at any time.
Okay, you take good care now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Jonathan Simon can't say he doesn't have passion, which most of us should have. But I'll tell you what, here's a book that you should get to all your friends, or at least read yourself if you're going to vote. And until we settle, and he's absolutely right, until we can actually see, and we have verifiable voting in this country, maybe I've been right all along when I say it's just an exercise in public masturbation. Anyway, there you have it for today. I'll be back tomorrow with all the news that neither one of us can stand but need to know. So I want to thank you guys for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.